A few days ago, Sayadawji spoke about how an upasana is the repeated observation of every arising object that arises within the four large fields of observation, that is the kaya, vedana, citta, and dhamma, the physical phenomena, the feelings, mind, and general objects. So observing these repeatedly every time there's an object arising is an upasana. And Sayadawji also spoke about what is the essence of an upasana, what makes it up. And he also talked about the benefits that come from observing with an upasana. So when we observe the obvious object arising in our mind and body, when it arises, then knowledge is developed. When knowledge arises, ignorance is dispelled. For knowledge to arise, the mind has to be clean. The mind is clean. And this means that unwholesome dhammas, akusalas, are not occurring. One has shame regarding the possibility that kilesas can arise. So one doesn't want to have them. And when one observes, there is no scattered mind. The mind is focused. One also has fear that kilesas will arise when one has a wholesome mind. These are wholesome parts of the mind. But when we don't observe with an upasana, when you don't observe with the practice of satipatthana, there are at least four kinds of unwholesome, concomitant mind states, akusala cetasikas. That is, there's always ahirika, lack of moral shame, anotapa, lack of moral dread, moral fear regarding kilesas, and also odicca, the scattered mind, and also moha, ignorance, delusion. So these four always arise without the practice. And sometimes, from time to time, an attractive object comes our way, and then, in addition to these four, we have greed, lobha. Sometimes, an unattractive object appears, and in addition to those initial four unwholesome mind states, there's also dosa, or anger. Thus, without the practice, there's always lobha or dosa, together with moha. And then, when we see something that causes envy, there can also be envy arising, or something to be jealous about, then jealousy arises, something to be proud about, pride arises. So according to the object, when there's no practice, then these unwholesome mind states arise. So, and where they arise is in one's being. They arise based on one's mind and body, nama and rupa. So those without practice, the practice of satipatthana, their nama and rupa, their mind and body, are like a plot of land where kilesas grow. And those who have the practice of satipatthana, on the other hand, and come to see the distinction between nama and rupa, how there are these two things, and come to see further how they are related by cause and effect, and further how they arise and pass away are unsatisfactory and non-self. For people who practice satipatthana and come to know in this way, what they have growing in the plot of land that is their being is vipassana. Their land becomes vipassana bhumi, the field for knowledge. So today, Sieroji will start to explain how Kilesa Bhumi, the field of Kilesas, and Vipassana Bhumi, the field of Vipassana knowledge, arise. The earth is a place where beings arise, human beings, other beings. They live on the earth. And also, trees of many kinds, plants, forests, mountains, streams, rivers, oceans. These are all based upon the earth. The earth is where all these things are based, where they live or are based on. And so, earth is called Bhumi in Pali. Bhavanti itati Bhumi. So that's how the word is derived in Pali. It means that in this place, in this earth, things live, things arise. Therefore, it's called Bhumi, the place where things grow and live. So for beings, us human beings, we have mind and matter, nama and rupa. We have the khanda or group of rupa, physical phenomena. Then there's feelings, vedana, and perception, called sanya, and sankhara, which is compound things, and vijnana, which is consciousness. So our being of nama and rupa has these five types of things. And one of them is physical, which is rupa, and the other four are nama, or mental. And based on these, based on our mind and body, akusala arises. Unwholesome mind states arise. Wholesome mind states arise. So various things arise based on this, based on the khandhas that are our being. And therefore, it's like the earth, because it's a place where things grow, sprout up. So it said, Bhumi viya Bhumi. This, our khandhas, our mind body, is called Bhumi also, because it's like earth. It's like, it's a place where things sprout. So akusala can arise in the mind. The mind becomes unclean. And it, where it occurs based on our nama and rupa, our khandhas. So therefore, this, our khandhas being the place where various kilesas arise, it's called Bhumi. And for those who do not have the weapon of the practice of satipatthana, kilesas sprout up because there's no control. Those who have the practice of satipatthana, to the extent they practice and develop knowledge, their five khandhas, their nama and rupa, become panya bhumi, the place where wisdom grows, the field of wisdom. So today, Sayadawji will raise the questions, why does the kilesa bhumi occur? Why does the field of kilesas arise? Why does Vipassana Bhumi occur? And he will give the answers too. So, for example, in the moment of seeing, what's there in the moment of seeing is the physical base, which is the eye base, and that has the capability of receiving the visible object. The visible object strikes the eye base. And at that moment, there's a spark. There's the knowing of the sight, that is seeing consciousness, and there's the sense of contact between the mind and the eye base, sorry, the mind and the object that occurs on the eye base, and then there's feeling, good or bad. So this is what is really there, these three things, the eye base, the object that strikes it, and the knowing, the consciousness that arises due to the meeting of the two. So the I-base is not a woman, it's not a man, it's not I. But instead of just knowing it as an I-base, we think, I see. There's a woman seeing, there's a man seeing. There's inside this body, there's a self that sees. So we don't know what is really there. We miss the mark. And we think we invent something that is not really there. So all beings are like this. This is what beings do. In hearing, there's the ear base. And then there's the sound waves which can be heard. They strike the ear base, and there's a spark, which is hearing consciousness. There's the knowing of the sound, and then there's contact, and also feeling good or bad. Smelling, similarly. Then there's the nose base, and a fragrance, some type of smell, strikes the nose base, and we know the smell. One knows the smell. There's the spark of smelling consciousness, contact, and feeling. Similarly, the tongue is capable of receiving tastes. So there's small receptors all over the tongue. And when a piece of food strikes the tongue, is on the tongue, then one comes to know sourness, sweetness, bland, bitter, salty, and hot. One can know what is the taste of the food. This knowing the taste is consciousness, and then there's contact and feeling also. So, and all over the body, in every place, everywhere in the body, except for the areas with which lack any moisture at all, there's receptor elements that can receive tangible objects. So whenever there's something hard or soft, warm or cold, whenever there's something coarse, fine, there's stiffness, tension, when any of these things touch somewhere in the body, one knows those different physical, tangible phenomena. The receptor is all over the body. And the striker are these physical elements, which can be primarily hard or cold or hot or warm or soft and so on. These strike the body base somewhere, and when that happens, there's a spark that arises, this touch consciousness. One knows the touch, and contact and feeling also arise. The mind, too, there's a base for mental objects, where mental objects strike. So there's thinking, imagining, and so on. Those are mental objects. Or also in the past, things that have been heard, seen, and so on. These things can strike them, the mind base. And then there's knowing of these, thinking, and so on. Knowing of these arises. So in this too, this experience of the senses, there's a base, a striker, and a spark. That's all that is there. But if one doesn't observe these sense experiences when they happen, we will know them in the wrong way. We will miss the mark, and we will, instead of seeing what is really there, we will add something. We will think, this is I who am experiencing. This is a woman. This is a man who's experiencing these things. So if we do as we are now with the Satipatthana practice, applying effort to observe the arising object, applying accurate aim so that the mind can see the object face to face, then sati becomes good. And when our sati becomes good, we automatically come to know these elements involved in the moment of sense experience. But people without the practice, or people who don't develop good sati in the practice, will have a mistaken idea about what is involved in sense experiences. So one will have these beliefs, the belief that there's a self, and they won't have, these things are already with us, these types of false beliefs, before we take up the practice. And if one doesn't remove them with the practice, then they will still be there, the belief in the self, and furthermore, belief in that there's a creator that made the self. So there's a jiva atta, there's an individual self, and paramatta atta, paramatta, a supreme being. And these things are permanent. So one will think in this way about one's experience. One will know what is really there in the wrong way. In the world, human beings are both male and female, and so we use that vocabulary to distinguish, because we have male gender and female gender. But in addition to this, people think of this, of our human body or being, as a self. So they think there is a self involved in their life. And mostly people think that this self or soul is connected with the mind. So Seroji would like to talk about, well, what do people believe about this self or soul? And it said in the Indian text, Nayaya Jain, the text, it said Jnanadhikarana Mata. That means that Atta, the self, is the base for knowledge. It's the base for knowing. And further it says, sa duido. So there's two kinds. There's two kinds of self, and one is called jiva atta, or individual self or soul, and the other is called paramatta, or supreme being. So the first one that this text describes is the supreme being. And it said, tatresaro paramatta. This supreme being rules the world. The supreme being created everything. Everything living, everything non-living. And being the creator, he or she can say, let it be, or let it die. Thus, this one rules the world. This Paramatta, supreme being, is also called Sabanyu. That means that being knows everything, has omniscient knowledge. Eko ewa. There's just one. There's just one supreme being. There's no second supreme being. And further, it's said to be sukha dukkha dukkha di rahito. It's free of happiness, free of suffering. It has no form. So this is how the supreme being is thought of in the texts of old in India. And then the individual self is described, jivata patesedrang. That means that there's an individual soul in every being. And this soul is said to know. What it knows is, it knows at the moment when they're seeing or hearing, bending, stretching, and so on. This individual self knows these things. So it's called vibhu. And further, this individual self that is in each being is either, it varies according to the being. A big being, like an elephant, will have a big soul. And a small being, like an ant, will have a little tiny soul. So this is said to be beino. It varies according to the being. And further, it's said to be permanent, necho. So that means that this physical body is destroyed, but atta, the self or soul, remains, and it just goes on to a new body. This is the doctrine of self and supreme being that existed in India. But when the Buddha became enlightened, he declared that there is anatta, there's no self. There's just nama and rupa, mental and physical phenomena. And these nama and rupa, they're not atta. They're not a self. They have no self in them, no self or soul. And because the Buddha preached this, we know it. When we practice, we come to know it practically. We come to see that there's mental and physicality, there's these two things in our experience, and we come to see how they are related as cause and effect. And this is thanks to the Buddha that we know this. So let's analyze. Just now we've heard Seyadawji speaking, and now you hear my speaking. So this is sound waves. And the sound waves reach the yogi's ear. The sound waves strike the ear, and there's knowing the sound, that's hearing consciousness. And then there's the contact, the sense of contact between the two, and then there's feeling, good or bad. So the two, the sound and the ear base, these two are physical. They're a group of physicality, so they're called rupa khanda. And then the consciousness, hearing consciousness, hearing contact and feeling, these are a group of mentality, so these are nama khanda. And in the moment of hearing, there are other mental components as well, but these are the ones that are obvious. So if we don't observe the ear and sound when hearing occurs, we won't know the ear. We won't know the sound striking the ear. These things are really there. These are physical. Further, we won't know the hearing consciousness that arises, knowing the sound. There won't be any knowing of how the sound and the mind meet at the ear, the sense of contact. This is really there in the moment of hearing. And then, if it's a likable sound, there will be a good feeling. A dislikable, disagreeable sound, there will be a bad feeling, or there also might be a neutral feeling, neither good nor bad. These are mental, and these things are really there. But if one doesn't observe them when they happen, one won't know these. And so one will take it to be I, or man, or woman. And on top of that, one will add this concept of self. So when there's the belief in the self, then there's moha, delusion, wavering, inability to decide, not knowing what is really there. So there will be akusala, unwholesome mind and mind states led by moha. They will have delusion as their leader. These occur based on our mind and body. So thus nama and rupa become the place where kilesa arise. But there won't be any shame about kilesas arising, and also no fear about them arising. And in addition, the mind will be scattered. So in the moment that there's moha, not knowing things as they are, there are also these other three. Where this arises is on the khandhas, the mind and the body, mental and physical, nama and rupa. One won't know the base element, the striker and the spark or consciousness. Further, one will know these things in the wrong way. And when there's an object that is attractive, then there will be greed, and one will crave after the object, the pleasant sound. And when there's something unpleasant, there will be dosa, anger, which smolders on and on in the mind. So in this way, the plot of land that is our nama and rupa, will become the place for kilesas to arise. So it's said in Pali, aparinyata khanda kilesa bhumi. When one doesn't observe the khandas, the nama and rupa, as they arise with virya, sati, samadhi, and panya, if one doesn't observe the arising physicality, kaya, with these factors, then one won't see it as it is. And therefore, whatever arises will be cause for kilesas. One won't see the nama and rupa as they are, nama and rupa. So this is the conclusion that one can draw. A more obvious example is what happens when one goes from a sitting, from a standing posture to a sitting posture. At that moment, there's a series of intentions to sit down, and these are mental, nama. And there's a series of sitting down moment by moment, bit by bit. The body becomes heavy, stiff, and goes down. This is rupa. In the moment of sitting, there's just this mind and body, just the mental and the physical. Due to the series of intentions to sit, there's a series of physical phenomena. Bit by bit, one sits, they're sitting down. The body become heavy, stiff, and going down. It's just like when we press a button and electricity flows and a fan turns as a result, or the light goes on. In the moment of sitting, what sits is the body, intention is mind. There's not a woman or man, a being. So what is really occurring in one's being is this physical and mental, the intention and the sitting down. This it is called bhumi. This nama and rupa is like a field, like a piece of earth. And if one doesn't observe it, one won't know it as it is. One won't know the intention and the physical component. So in addition to the not knowing, which is moha, there will also be lack of shame regarding akusala, lack of fear regarding akusala, and also scatteredness of mind. In addition to this, when the sitting down is something pleasant, there will be lobha, greed. If it's something unpleasant, there will be dosa, or anger. And in this way, many kilesas arise based on just this sitting down process. And the next time one sits down from a standing posture, similarly. So what's really there in the moment of sitting down is a series of intentions which are mental. And then there's a series of sitting down that happens bit by bit. Sometimes, when we observe, sometimes the mind will fall on the physical process, the sitting down bit by bit, the physical sensation. Sometimes one will be aware of the mind, the intention. So one can't know both at the same time, but one will come to know one or the other. And one will come to know sitting happens only when there's the intention to sit. Only if the intention is there will the sitting down happen. The sitting down is the result that comes about due to a series of causes. That is the intention. So that one will see the way in which mentality, nama, causes physicality, rupa. One will see that there is just this nama and rupa, just the mind and matter, nothing else. And one will also see this sitting down, is not because a supreme being commanded, sit down. It's just due to the intention to sit down. And in this process of sitting down, there's no soul to be found. So these beliefs come into our mind because of not having the practice. But with the practice, one comes to see what's really there. It's just a cause. In this case, nama, mentality, is the cause, and a result, physicality. So when we see like this, then the belief in the self and a belief in the Supreme Being is eliminated naturally. So just as there is a cause and effect relationship in which the mental causes the physical, nama causing rupa, so too nama causes nama, mentality causes mentality. And rupa can also cause nama, physicality causing mentality. The physical rupa can also cause physical results. And yogis, there are these mutual cause and effect relationships between nama and rupa. And yogis who practice meticulously can come to know this within 7 days. Without respect for the work that one is doing, without meticulousness, meticulous care in the practice, if one just gets up quickly, sits down quickly, changes postures quickly, makes bodily movements quickly, then whether it's a week or much, much longer, there's no way for this knowledge to come about. When one is meticulous in the practice, this knowledge comes about quickly. When one knows the cause and effect relationships between nama and rupa, then one understands that there is no supreme being. Without knowing how nama and rupa are related by cause and effect, one's knowledge will err. One will make a mistake and think that there is a supreme being. So this is a mistake, and it leads to having faith, misplaced faith. And this is prevalent in the world. If one practices satipatthana meticulously and develops the knowledge of nama and rupa, and further sees how they are related as cause and effect, when one comes to see that, one won't make any mistake about what is really there, and one will come to have correct faith. So this topic will be continued tomorrow. That's all for today. Sadhu. Sadhu.